Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast. I hope you are good. I am currently sitting here looking at the beautiful blue sky. I've got my back doors open, that's what she said, and I can hear the birds singing and it's just glorious. I've been very fortunate and spent this half term, and I spent a couple of days down at my sister's in Brighton, and the sun was shining and she's got a swimming pool and my daughters were just swimming the whole time and it was just lovely. So I'm feeling very grateful and happy, and I hope you've had a nice week and you've got to enjoy some of the sunshine as well wherever you are in the world. Can you hear the pigeons? I don't know if this mic will pick it up. And my washing machine, of course. I think my washing machine is always on when I'm recording. And every time I record, I think I really shouldn't record when I've got my washing machine on. So sorry. But anyway, how are you? I'm feeling better. Thank God. I'm going for an MRI scan today. I've never been for one before. I'm quite excited. And this week's podcast, I'm joined by the lovely... Oh, my machine's going to start going off now. I'm so sorry. The lovely Mary Lay, who is a singer-songwriter. And she started a business called Mamas in Music, which helps mums in the music industry. Because when you work... I used to do a bit of music. And when you go into a studio to do a writing or recording session, they tend to start like late morning, early afternoon, and they'll go on for as long as, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning. All the sound engineers I know don't really have much of a life outside their work because you're just working all the time. Obviously, when you have babies, you can work, but then you don't see your kids. And if you don't have anyone to look after your kids, then you can't work. So mums need support. It needs to be recognised because the music industry has always been a male-dominated industry anyway. I don't personally know any female engineers. I've worked with DJs my whole life. I could count the amount of female DJs I know on my one hand. It's such a male-dominated industry, and we need to make it more accessible for women. And we need, you know, people need to realise that you need to make exceptions and you need to change things. So it's what she's doing is amazing. So it was a really good chat with her, which you'll hear all about, obviously, about what she does in her career. And I will post links, so check out her Instagram. She's got such a beautiful voice. I've just been listening to some of her music. So yes, check her out and I'll see you in a bit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Work.
So yeah, it's just not easy, is it? I mean, it's just I sort of always say it, everyone I speak to has either got it. Sometimes I think, oh, you've got it a bit easy, you know, not easy, but you've got a better situation. And then there'll be someone else, and you speak to, you think, oh God, I feel so guilty for ever complaining because they've got it far worse, you know. And
it depends what people tell you as well.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, sometimes when you talk to people, they're like, oh, yeah, everything's fine. And
I'm not one of those. I'm not very good at lying. No. If someone asks me how it is, I'm so truthful.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... I always try and see the positive in everything. So I'm always like, do you know what? I'm fine. And to be fair, I have been fine. I do feel quite... I don't feel guilty, but... I know people are very much like, oh, it must be really hard for like the single parents. But I'm a bit like, I feel sorry for my mate who's rowing with her husband constantly, or, you know, who kids are more difficult. I am fortunate. My kids are quite good. They do just get on with it and we all get on. And, you know, it's quite a nice. But I don't feel, I mean, obviously I'd prefer it if I did have some help, but that's just in general anyway.
Well, I think, you know, even when there is two of you, it's, I don't know. I mean, sometimes it's even harder because I think sometimes you do, and I hate, and it's nothing about women versus men, this actually, it's just that women, like, or no, I should say whoever's sort of doing, you know, like getting them out the door and getting going somewhere has a routine. Yep. So whoever that may be, could be anyone actually, it's nothing about gender, it's just like, whoever does that most of the time, then it's like you form that system, that routine. And then when it's sort of a bit kind of like, oh, actually tomorrow it's going to be a bit different because someone's going to do this, and, you know, and that's when I think it can be more stressful in a weird way.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so because everyone's trying to do their best, but everyone's got their own way of doing it. And I just, it's just flipping hard. I mean, it's just been the hardest 12 months for me, but equally some amazing things have happened, but it's also just, it's just challenging. Just every day it's like, so, anyway.
We're getting excited for things to hopefully be changing.
I just can't wait.
Fingers crossed.
I just can't believe how excited I am to literally go to a cafe and meet someone. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, sometimes I think I'm not sure how much it will change in my day to day because Joni's two and her world is going to the park, you know. Yeah. So we just walk everywhere, go to the park, come home. And I think sometimes I do think, what's actually going to be different for me?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But it's going to be the just being able to take her into London for an afternoon and you know, get on the train and actually go in and sort of and so but it's exciting.
Yeah, see, there was all these things that I thought, oh, yeah, we'll do that because we could just jump on the tube and go into town because it's dead, isn't it? I'm talking about last year when people were going for, like, walks around town.
Yeah, we didn't actually really.
I mean, well, no, we didn't do that, but then we weren't supposed to, were we, really?
Not really.
We were supposed to just be staying in and, you know.
Yeah, there was the time when it opened up. No, we did do it once when it opened up again and you could go. I mean, things were still closed, but you could go.
Yeah.
I think you could go to a cafe, couldn't you, or something? I've forgotten. That's the thing. Yeah. I've forgotten what we've ever been allowed to do.
Have you found that your memory's just gone anyway?
What, since being a mother, or or being in lockdown?
The combination of the two. I think
I've forgotten what the rules were. I have no idea what we were allowed to do in different months, and you know, I think, well, hang on, it does feel like we've just been in lockdown for 12 months really now.
you know, that's how it feels. So I can't, when people are like, oh, do you remember when you could go meet four friends or whatever? Well, I can't now. I can't remember that. I can't remember doing it.
No.
So no.
Everything's just kind of been the same, really.
Yeah. Well, because you're limited anyway, and you know, got a little child, and so. But anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, it's fine.
Yes. I suppose I should introduce you, really, shouldn't I?
I know. Well, yeah.
There, we're chatting away.
I know.
What? So you're singer songwriter.
Yes, I am.
More singer, more songwriter.
More songwriter or these days.
More songwriter.
Yeah. So I used to be kind of just doing the artist thing when I was a bit younger, and that was always my main focus. And then that, after many years, just kind of, it wasn't going in the direction I had really wanted. And it got to a point where I just decided deep down, it was a combination. I knew that we hadn't really got, you know, it just wasn't kind of going how it should be. But at the same time, I just truthfully started to kind of want to be more involved in the creative side and just creating music.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't enjoying the performing or the gigging, you know, as much. And I just... Yeah, I just love being in the studio and creating stuff. And at that time, I happened to connect with an old school friend, and he was kind of from that world of like writing pop, and he was in my brother's year at school, and he was amazing. And when we were like 16, he was writing for like Kylie and Danny and
yeah,
and he was like a bit of a child prodigy of a production house called Xenomania. And we, you know, I'd at that age gone off and done the kind of folk, I was a bit of a kind of folk pop artist, and that was kind of, my path. And then we kind of reconnected, and he was like, oh, maybe we should try and write together. And I was a bit like, oh, I'm not really sure if I'm, you know, a pop writer. And we did get together, and it just worked. And then we went on and we did, he asked me to do X Factor with him. So he was like producing all the groups. So he sort of took me on as a bit of a writer, really. And then that's how it's just evolved. So now I am, you know, I kind of then wrote a few songs with him, and then managed to get a publishing deal on the back of that. And now.
Oh, wicked.
Yeah. So now I am. I'm kind of, I'm a published songwriter, really, primarily, but then I can't really stop doing the artist thing, because it's just, I like it. I'm doing it again this year. I'm like, I'll write some stuff for me again. And I don't think that ever stops, you know, and that just carries on.
Oh, that's lovely.
So that's, that's how I kind of, that's where I'm at now. So, yeah.
So I will just say your name, because I've not said your name.
Oh, no, of course.
Mary Lay.
Yeah. Mary Lay. Yeah.
Now we've got that out of the way. Yeah. So where are you from?
So, well, I was born in Cambridge and then moved to, so I was in Cambridge and we moved to further down south to East Grinstead.
Oh, okay, yes.
Everyone seems to know East Grinstead. And that was where I lived for many years with my family, and then moved to London how many years ago now, about 10 years ago, and now ended up, so I did, I've always been south of the river, so I've always lived in like Wandsworth, Balham, Tooting, all around that area, Clapham, and then now I have a gaff in South Norwood, which is sort of between between Crystal Palace and Croydon.
My sister used to live there.
Oh, really?
For the clock tower.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit rough around the edges, but we love it, and it's got a great community, and there's loads of creative people here, and it's just it's coming on. You know, there's lots of cool. I shouldn't say cool. I don't mean cool, but I mean there are lots of cool people moving here, which is now why I know it's getting cool, because you can see all the cool people moving in, and you're like, oh, okay, maybe we're getting quite cool now. So we used to live in Crystal Palace, but we it's just crazy expensive, and so we moved down to the gritty end.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
So have you always sung?
Yeah.
Always been musical?
Yeah, pretty much since being since being small, and you know, I think I started singing when I was like, well, maybe sort of six or something, and you know, yeah. It's always just that thing of like, oh, she's got a pretty voice, and it wasn't really until I was about 16, I think, that I joined bands, and then kind of thought, oh, you know, oh no, I was younger actually. No, I started singing with an opera singer. I was trained by an opera singer.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I know. She was an amazing singer, and she did opera. And
so you had lessons.
Yeah,
then?
I did. Yeah,
yeah,
but really properly.
Did you do music at school?
Well, I just wasn't great at the theory side. So weirdly, I didn't do GCSE. I didn't do music GCSE, I don't think, which is bizarre because I went on and did a music production and performance at college, and that was my you know, that was kind of how I got into the sort of, you know, writing and recording side.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't, at school, I wasn't, you know, interested in sitting down and learning scales or pieces. Yeah. And so I just didn't do anything. I didn't do anything the right way, I don't think, really, back then. But it didn't seem to matter because I did it, you know, I did my English and the drama and all the creative stuff. And then I kind of just, you know, I was going to go to uni to do English, and then ended up deciding like a vocational music course was more me.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And then, yeah, so I started learning to sing properly about, I think probably about maybe 13, and then could have gone down that road, I think, for a while. I was sort of trying to do the theatre stuff, but soon realised it just wasn't really for me. Once I joined a band, I was just kind of, I realised that's where I wanted to be. So I just always did the fronted bands and kind of just was the lead woman.
Yeah. So when did you start writing?
Well, I think around that age, 15, 16, but very, it wasn't, you know, I don't think I really, and it's quite interesting, I think, really, because I've been sort of exploring all of this lately, a little bit with obviously the whole being a mum in music and finding that quite hard and looking at all the reasons why. Yeah. And I think kind of going right back to when I was that age, you know, I very much was the sort of lead, you know, and that was very kind of accepted. But obviously I was quite sort of it was like I was being quite sort of pushed and pulled quite a bit, you know, to be a certain something or someone.
Yeah.
And it was quite accepted somehow. Like, I don't know if it's quite the same now. I think it's getting a lot better. But I was very, you know, it's a shame really looking back. You know, this is what I mean. It's like a 15, 16-year-old now, I think, there's a lot more headstrong, amazing artists that actually really establish and know who they are. I mean, no one knows who they really are at 15, but, you know, I think there's a lot of people, like the first person that just brings to mind is Lorde. I mean, think how like established and amazing. She's such a sort of, you know, she just kind of had a real, it seemed like she had a real understanding of who she was, and, or she was allowed, and, you know, to find that and be, nurtured. But I never really felt like I had that. It was I hadn't figured that out. And I think, you know, being the front of a band, it was kind of like I was desperate really to get into the writing, because I think that's how you do find out who you are. And it was always a bit, the guys in the band, it wasn't like they really liked that. It was a bit like, well, you're the singer, you know, you sing the songs.
So who wrote the songs?
Well, he was always the kind of the guitarist, and I think I dabbled. Okay. I think I dabbled, but at the time I didn't play an instrument really very well, and I was always writing lyrics and stuff. But I think I just wanted to get everyone out of the way and just get into my own world. And you know, and I'm glad I did. I left the first band. We got quite a lot of interest. You know, we were starting to get labels, and we'd signed a deal with a management company. And it was just very badly, you know, very badly kind of looked after. We weren't looked after. We were just pushed and pulled. Yeah. And I kind of made a lucky escape, really, from that, I think. So I left that, and then I started another band and tried to do a bit more writing in that. But again, never really. I don't think I just didn't feel confident enough for whatever reason. I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
So then I left that. And then after that, that's when I really sort of took a bit of a break from everything and then decided, you know, this is my time now. And I did start kind of really learning the guitar and getting better at playing music and writing. And then I kind of did end up writing a whole load of songs and, you know, and that was kind of, that felt much more where I was meant to be, really.
And so were you solo?
Yeah. I mean, you? I had musicians that played with me and wrote with me and stuff. I met an amazingly talented guy. I went to get a job at the BBC, actually, and worked in ad sales because I was just like, I needed to get into a job in London. My plan was get out of East Grinstead, get out of this tiny claustrophobic town, get to London. Yeah. And I thought, you know, that's where maybe I can really get things going. And it actually did happen like that. I ended up working at the BBC. Yeah. I ended up doing a song contest at Christmas and ended up playing to it was probably at least 1,000 people. Ended up like, you know, one of their huge Christmas parties when they were allowed to do things like that. And then,
yeah.
And then approached by a woman whose husband turned out to be a guy called Michael McAvoy. And they were an amazing couple. They'd spent many years in Nashville, and he used to be in traffic, and he'd written with loads of people, and he saw something, you know, they as a couple saw something in me, and they were, really helped me kind of, I guess, you know, develop me and nurture me and do all those things that I really, really desperately probably needed then. So that they were really kind of, without them, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it sadly just didn't last really in that chapter, because it just wasn't, you know, we wrote all these songs and we had like a small independent publishing deal and we had label interest and we did so much stuff, but it was still you know, the industry is really hard. It's soul destroying, really. I mean, you can have everything. Yeah. Just stars were not bloody aligning, you know.
Yes.
And I know so many people that it, you know, it's a combination. Sometimes I think, oh, maybe the songs just weren't good enough, or we, you know, but it just, you try to be authentic as a writer and an artist, and you know, it just, sometimes it is luck. Sometimes, you know, it's
right place, right time. I think where now, although the music industry is in trouble financially because people aren't paying for music anymore, there's so much more scope for artists to do things on their own. So you can write your own songs, you can put them out into the world, and you can be whoever you want to be.
Absolutely.
But because I was on a similar path to you.
Yeah. I've realised I don't know anything about you.
Don't worry about this.
No, we need to.
This is about you. But it's like, for me, I was like, it's right place, right time. You've got to be the person that they're looking for at that moment. Yeah. I think they have an idea in their head, or some A&R just wants to take a chance on you. There's a million reasons could happen, but there's just so many people trying to do it.
I know.
And it's really, really, really hard.
Really hard.
And I think you've got to, yeah.
And I remember one of the guys that kind of mentored me was a great guy called Mark Moreau. He used to run Island Records, and he, you know, he really was like very passionate. I was a bit like his kind of, you know, his project that he, I think, just was, you know, for him, if he heard this, he'd probably think this was a sad thing to say. But what I mean is he wasn't putting all his eggs in my basket, you know, but he was really like, he wanted it to work out. And I know that he thought that it could be something. But even with someone like that, who was so well connected, and it just did not go in the direction it should have gone, really. And I think what I think's kind of good is that at the end, I wasn't actually, I was kind of heartbroken because of all the people that it affected and kind of walking away from that and making that decision. It was very, very sad. And that was the bit that broke my heart. But equally, it was a bit like leaving a marriage. I knew deep down it was there was time for a shift. And I didn't want to write that kind of music anymore. And it wasn't really, you know, I felt like I'd been pigeonholed a bit as this kind of folk chick. And actually, I was like, nah, I just... So then it's just... Then the stars, you could say, did align. Because then I met Tim.
Yeah.
And we started writing pop. And I was kind of like, this is what I need. This feels right. Yeah. This feels really right. And, you know, that was the kind of shift. And obviously, as I said, you know, I've come back to writing again now. And I'm not looking for... certainly not looking for any deals or anything like that, but I just love it, and it makes me...
It's such a funny thing, I think, music, because you start... Well, for me anyway, I made music because I loved writing and I loved singing, but I hated performing.
Yeah.
So if I could just make music that I wanted to make and be able to sell that without all the other stuff and make a living, I mean, that'd be amazing. Mm. But the music industry is a business.
It really is.
So people aren't going to want to take it, especially back in the day when there was so much money involved in it. I mean, I remember, how much did Robbie Williams get on his publishing deal from EMI?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Was it like $9 million or something?
It? Flipping out. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Maybe it wasn't that much. But this is right before the crash.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, a long time ago.
He nailed it.
There was... People didn't want to take a chance necessarily on something that was new or a bit different or might not sell however many copies they needed to sell because there was so much money involved. But so it's kind of like a... Now it's hard because artists aren't making the money. They need to be able to do it as a full-time job. But there's more freedom to make the music that you want to make rather than having to be a certain way. You know, like you said before about you felt that now artists can be who they want to be. When I was trying to be an artist, I was told that I had to lose weight.
You've
got to look a certain way. You need to sound a certain way because they want to produce that pop star. But I didn't want to be a fucking pop star. That wasn't who I was, you know, but it's...
I think that's it.
Now you can be different.
I think that's it. There's a lot more... Because of social media now, like, it's... It does allow people just to kind of... Yeah, form their own business, really, and their own brand. And just, you don't need anyone to help you do that. You can do it, and you can record it in your bedroom. You can put it out. You don't need a label. So, I think it's funny. It's like the other day I said to someone, oh, I wish I'd been born in the 60s where you had, like, when people took a real chance on an artist. You could walk in with nothing other than singing in some label's office, and they'd say, wow, we're going to sign her. She's amazing. And then they'll take you to the studio next week and you can record your album and all this kind of investment and nurturing goes into you. But actually, I think in a way it's almost like, well, I'd quite like to be 16 now because it's gone completely the other way. You've got all the control yourself. You don't need anyone to invest in you. So I just think, I mean, certainly not blaming the time, because ultimately I'm responsible for my own, you know, my own decisions and career and the songs that we wrote. And but I remember, I think I forgot to say, but Mark, what he used to say was, you know, success is when opportunity meets preparedness. And I think that's really really true. But I do also think that there is luck involved, you know. And you know, opportunities come in different kind of all different shapes and sizes, don't they, really? So I feel like my opportunities are almost now. This feels a bit more like my time, strangely, even though I've had a child and, you know, things have moved
on. So how have you found that's affected everything then? Because you said, like, you've been thinking a lot about being a woman in music and a mother.
100%.
So what have you discovered?
Well, I've discovered a lot, really. I will obviously talk about mamas in music because that's something that myself and my partner, don't really, business partner sounds a bit formal, because we're not making any money from it, but we've created a platform and a network called Mamas in Music. And that's really all come about because you know, it just occurred to me really when I did, you know, I did quite a lot of thinking when I was first with my daughter, when she was obviously newborn and those scary, lonely days. And I think the things that I realised were that I'd probably spent most of my career as a woman in music thinking, you know, or feeling like, you know, really like the truth was that if I had a child, it would be time's up for my career.
Yeah.
You know, and that belief system was really, like I was saying before, like, was probably in me from being about 15, really, because I think, and I'm sure you might have found the same, that if you were talented when you were young, it was almost a bit like, you know, the industry was very much run by middle class white men, and I think we were told really from an early age, well, you should be really lucky to be in the UK industry because this is a privilege, you know, you're talented, but you know, we're not going to pay you to do this gig. You're just going to do everything for free and you rock up and you look beautiful and you know, and I think that all of that was really like just ingrained, really quietly ingrained, you know, and you sort of just got on with it and you didn't, I just think I used to, you know, I mean, I loved it, obviously. I didn't do it for, I wasn't in it unhappy. It was great. But what I mean is, it's just like a very kind of, there's an undertone of just, you should be really grateful for this. You know, don't put up any kind of, don't be a diva, you know, don't be a diva. Yeah. And just kind of, And I think, so yeah. And I mean, it wasn't necessarily even men making me think that was kind of time's up. It was other women as well, you know. It was like I had older women saying to me, oh, you know, you do realise when you have a child, like, you won't be able to do this anymore. And I think it's just all really sad. Like, that was just, you know, and I did leave it quite late to have a child. And even when I got pregnant, I was a bit panicked, to be honest. You know, even though it was quite perfectly normal and timed well and whatever, you know. Well, actually, it wasn't timed well because we were due to be married. But it's fine. Oh. No. It all worked out wonderfully. But, you know, I think it's sad that I spent really most of my 20s thinking that, you know, and thinking that was the way it was going to be. And I think, I think at that time I was quite feeling quite sort of lonely and thinking that might be it. I mean, I must say at this point, you know, obviously was signed not that long with my publishing company Reservoir, and they are amazing, and I have a great team there who they were all always and always have been incredibly supportive, and they didn't really blink when I said I was pregnant. So actually they were brilliant, but there still wasn't, it was still kind of, you know, you're doing your thing, you're a mum, so we'll just kind of wait for you, which is great. But I think what's missing in the industry is just kind of, you know, that sort of, well, okay, you know, you're going to obviously take your time to be you know, looking after your baby when you first have a baby, but then here's the structure and here's how we're going to get you back into the rhythm, and here's what we're going to do. Yeah. And there isn't any of that. There's never those conversations. So even with all the goodwill in the world of like, go off and have your baby, it's like you're still like, well, but are you know, am I accepted back? Yeah. And what's going to happen? And and because most musicians and artists are self-employed, it's like, well, you know, you don't have any guarantees in terms of kind of maternity support or any of those things. Yeah. So there's just, it just got me thinking about an awful lot. And at the same sort of time, I met this lady in LA called Tiff Randall. She's more on the sort of, she's like a composer for film, and she's a very talented artist. And we just, you know, she came to me with this idea and just said, look, is it just me or is this just shocking for women that have had babies? I was like, yes. And we just connected for about a year, really just talking about breastfeeding and helping each other through all the kind of the dark days, you know, the long nights and all of that. Although I still feel like that's going on for me, to be honest, 2 years later. But
We did connect.
Oh, she's still a baby.
Yeah, she is a baby. She's a boddler, apparently. She's a cross between a toddler and a baby. She's a boddler. I love that. So she, you know, so me and Tiff really connected, and we've launched this kind of very young still, very early days, but this platform called Mamas in Music. And it is truthfully really just a way to connect mums within the industry. Perhaps I can talk more about that later, but that's where I'm at. So your question, which I've now forgotten, I think, was how have you found being a mum in the industry? And I don't know if I've fully answered that, but I think my fears is initially what was kind of the most present thing. And now it's hard. There's not much time. I'm usually exhausted, but I feel I've been more creative and more productive than I ever have.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I think my lack of time and my determination to want to carry on and do all of this means that those limited times, I will quickly just try and write a song in half an hour, or force myself to do some amazing vocals, or, you know,
With how have you been doing writing sessions then? Do you write with the artist, or do you just write with your partner?
No, do you mean my partner Tiff, that I just mentioned?
No, the songwriting.
So with the songwriting, so Reservoir kind of will put me either with an artist direct or a producer. Yeah. And we've done most of that over Zoom in the last 12 months.
So who looks after your daughter when you're working?
So initially when we were about to put her in a kind of nursery, just before the pandemic struck, and she went one day, and then the next day they closed. So literally I spent a year getting excited about getting back out to a session. I had one session in London, the best day of my life. Or I think it was 2 days, this amazing, I was literally thought I was living in a film, you know, I was like, it was just amazing. And then the next day Boris announced everything was closing and she had to come back. And then I was into full-time parenting, because obviously James has the most sensible jobs, earning a steady, you know, income. So I had to, it was like, right, well, that's it, love, you're up. So it was pretty gutting, because overnight really all of my work just, and I don't know if you felt the same with being a mum and trying to work, but it sort of ends up feeling a bit like like it's a hobby, you know, and like, oh, will you just do it, you fit it in when you can. It's like I've still got my family saying that stuff to me, you know. It's someone said to me the other day, it's like, oh, she used to do that, but she's got children now, so she just it makes me so cross. I get so cross, and I have to really level out and think,
but then did anyone think it was a real job anyway? Do you know what I mean?
That's like, a fair point, actually. Like, that is a fair point. When you say, oh, I'm working from home, what do you do? I'm a songwriter. Do you mind just staying in?
Whatever you do from home is, you don't work. I've worked from home for 12 years, and it's only actually since the pandemic's done me a massive favour, because then people are like, oh, you can actually work.
Yes, you're right.
You know, so working from home, you're fucked anyway. But music, I just don't think people really understand the concept of a writing session when you've got to sit down and write a song.
I mean,
but then I suppose you wouldn't, would you? Unless you've actually had to do it. I suppose you just have ideas of it just.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great fun. And it's, you know, it doesn't feel like work in the traditional sense. I mean, I have had, I've always had until like I got my publishing deal, I've always had a job along the side. I've always worked in offices and not done a great job, to be honest. I'm rubbish. I'm really not the best in an office, but that's what I've always done, because, you know, my mum did that, and that's what my dad did. And I just kind of learned that that's what you do. And to be fair, I've had some great jobs that have allowed for me to do it. I worked for my sister-in-law for many years, actually. And to be honest, that was the best job that I ever did. because she understood and she knew what, you know, she knew exactly what I was trying to achieve. But, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, I do feel like that is often the thing. Oh, you know, now you've got kids, are you going to be able to carry on? And I mean, it's ridiculous. I feel ridiculous talking about it, like saying it like that, because I think some people might not have experienced that. But I wonder whether it comes down to, you know, kind of, well, I think childcare in this country is an issue, isn't it? It's so bloody expensive.
If you've got enough money, you can pay for someone to look after your child.
And it does help.
And do whatever the fuck you want to do.
It does help. Yeah. I'm sorry, but it does help. I'm not saying,
of course it does.
I'm not saying that you don't then, you know, there are other struggles to face, but it's a damn sight easier. And without that, you know, or even just having a snippet of time to yourself, as you well know, like those hours just go like that, don't they? I mean, I'm picking my daughter up at 1 o'clock and I'm thinking, ooh, you know, got this today. And then it's just like, you want to do it because you've got this like 3 hours. And you're like, I want to do everything, you know.
Yeah.
You then achieve nothing.
And it goes like that. You make a cup of tea and then you've got to go and get
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's...
So,
yeah.
You know.
But it surprised me when you said that you've been more productive and creative.
Well, I have.
Because I just think, like, when I used to write, I just have to not think about anything. You've just got to be so completely in the moment. And I can't... Even when I'm working from home, I'm still doing the washing and I'm still doing 10 other things at the same time, because that's what I just have to get everything done.
Me
and
too.
I'd love, like, people have asked me, like, why don't you do music again? Why don't you write again? And I'm like, if I didn't have to do anything else, I'd love to, but I just don't think I could get myself into that mindset of, you know.
In truth, I'll tell you what it is. When I used to be an artist and was writing just for me, if I was trying to do that now, it would be a bloody disaster, because when it comes to writing for me, I will procrastinate. I'll do anything else to get and buckle down and do that. But when I'm writing for someone else and working with a producer, and we do a session, we meet, and we, you know, the time that we will have like 2 or 3 hours, and I need to deliver something and I need to send that back to. So I've trained a little bit to, you know, I mean, like, there's people like the Nashville, you know, all the Nashville songwriters, you know, they do go into their publisher's office every day and they sit there from 9 to 5 pretty much, and they write 5 songs or whatever. You know, it is a job to a lot of people, like, and I think actually I'm a bit somewhere in the middle. I agree with you in one sense, because I think I need to be, you know, like, I need to do, I drop Joni off, I come back, and James would always be like, oh, why don't you just crack on? I'm like, no, I have to do a tidy up. I can't see toys all around me. I need everything to be, I need to be in my zone. But the other side of me is, I think, you know, the more you kind of use the songwriting muscle and train it a bit, the more when you need to just do it, it kind of does click in. So, I mean, you know. Like I say, if I'm having a day to write for me, I pretty much guarantee I'll get to the end of that day. I'll be like, right, I'm going to have a day where I'm just going to write for me. And I'll get to the end and I'll be like, oh, I've done absolutely sod all.
Yeah.
You know, I've done 3 loads of washing though.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. But, I can't remember what you'd asked me now or where we've gone, but.
Oh, look, I want to know about Mamas in Music then. So what is the platform on?
So it's, at the moment, it's just across socials. We've got a website, we're on Instagram, Mamas in Music, Facebook, and we've got a Facebook group, which is growing rapidly by the day, which is great. I think we must have about 70 members now, which we've only just started it. And I mean, every member is a music industry mum doing a music industry job. Which is amazing, you know. Then and they're coming on and they're saying, oh my goodness, we didn't realize you existed, you know, I'm a producer or I'm an engineer or I'm a music lawyer or I'm a songwriter or an artist, and we're kind of like just welcoming everyone. And I mean, the thing is to say, obviously it's not a completely new concept, because there's so many amazing women groups and platforms out there in the music industry, and I'm sure other industries as well. You know, there's the She Said So's, and Women in Control, and She's the Music, and there's a lot. But what we really noticed when we started is there's just this gaping hole for this demographic of women, this mum in the music industry. And I've with the kind of exploring of setting it up and you know, all the research we've done, I have found that it's a bit of a funny one. A lot of the kind of, because of all the work and the hard work that's going on to kind of really close the gender gap and, you know, in the industry. And I do think that women, it's like another uncomfortable conversation, you know, like you've just kind of clawed your way up and you're kind of, you know, you're saying, well, we want, you know, we want equal pay and we want to be recognised and we've got all these struggles. And then you're saying, oh, but I'm also a mother, by the way. You know, and there's all that extra crap to have to kind of, and I just think it's like, I'm not saying they're all mothers, but there's a hell of a lot of them that are. And we're trying to find those women and say, you know, you're doing amazing things for fighting the kind of the women's battle in this industry. But don't forget to be proud that you're also a mum and that you're also dealing with that. And you're doing a great job as you know, as in your career. So we're trying to be, you know, what we don't want to be is a moaning mum's club, a kind of slagging off dads, or it's not that, far from that. It's a way to help each other be super productive, proactive about our careers, trying to create. One of the things we're doing is creating a database where all these women who are mothers go on, you know, on this list, and we can use each other for work. So there's lots of producers in the group. There's songwriters, there's singers, there's, you know, session players, engineers, music lawyers, you know, whatever it may be. And we kind of want to be able to use each other to get work, but also to kind of help maybe do, you know, talks, panels, workshops, to all allow each other to progress and be proactive. And then I guess in the wider kind of community, you know, one of the things that I'm keen to work with Reservoir is one of the ideas we've got is to set up a writer's camp. I don't know if you've ever done, I'm sure you've done plenty in your time, but kind of writing with getting an actual camp for mothers that are in the industry. So inviting key producers, songwriters, artists, bringing them together, and then looking for sponsorship within the industry to maybe either have like a creche, or you know have a beautiful space for a couple of days, have a creche or childcare support, or have financial so everybody gets like a token for that weekend, for those 2 days, where they can put towards, you know, childcare or whatever, or maybe something else, you know. So that's another idea that we really kind of grafting, but in the wider kind of community and the industry, I guess it's the long kind of road is to rewire the mindset really of the industry and just you know, I mean there's artists that who are doing a few things and talking about it, and I love those people, like three that spring to mind: Paloma Faith, Jessie Ware, Alanis Morissette. But we're, you know, where we're at the moment, we, you know, I could potentially try and knock on those doors and get someone high profile to, you know, and we'd love that because we know that they've got really positive things to say. And but what I think I'm also aware of is that we want to recognise the women who are and the mothers who are at this level, which I call, it's much more like, this is a career, you're not financially completely sound, you know, you have got those struggles are still real, and you can still be as successful. As we well know, most musicians have another job, you know. I mean, there's not many that are completely, you know, able to kind of live freely and have all the financial support. So I think it's making sure that we come together as a community with all those women first. And then when the timing's right, we get endorsement and support from those other mums who've, you know, who will be facing other stigmas and struggles. And I mean, I know Paloma's just done an amazing, or I think she did a documentary and she's now playing it of her, you know, taking her child to a gig or on tour, or, and the struggles and the stigmas that came with all of that. So it is a long-term rewiring of the mindset, really, and trying to implement ways and, you know, have structures and systems that allow for them to be returning to work. I just think to myself, imagine if there's the next Adele and she's 18 and she had a kid and she went to the Brit schools, but she had a kid and she had this voice, but she gave it up because she thought that if you had a baby, you couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
It's
you know? So that's it. That's I'm quite passionate about it.
It's like that film with is it Jessie Buckley?
Oh, I'm really, really bad with films.
Wild Rose.
I've not seen it, but I'd like to watch it.
Oh, it's amazing. It's absolutely, she's amazing, but she's a bit of a wrong'un.
Yeah.
And she's got a young kid who the mum looks after, but she's got this dream and it's just, cool. It's hard. It's a very good film.
Oh, I'd like to watch that. Sounds amazing. Yeah, I mean, but it's like, we're passionate about
it. It's like with sound engineers, like my friend works at Air.
Yeah.
And amazing. He does like 18-hour days. Like, you couldn't do that if you had.
No.
Like, women can't do that job if they have kids.
No. And this is my point.
Can they?
No, because I got into a bit of a guy was sort of saying, oh, you know, you're closing the door on men. And it's like, no. Absolutely not. The struggle is as a parent is real for everyone, but I'm saying that there is a unique set of struggles for being the mother, because, you know, I went to a writing session not too long before lockdown, the first lockdown, and, you know, I was there with one other writer, and she obviously didn't have kids, and she was amazingly talented, and, you know, she said she might want them in the future, but at the moment she's aware that she can't do what she's trying to do, or she felt like she can't do what she's trying to do with kids. And then there was three other guys there, and, you know, they were all talking about their kids and their wives being at home, and one of them even said, because I had to go out and express halfway through the session, because Joni was like 4 months old, I think, or 5 months old. Oh, no, that's not true. She was older than that. Sorry, I'm getting my dates wrong. But even so, I was, you know, still breastfeeding now. So that's another story. It's crazy.
Oh, I breastfed till they were over two.
Oh, I'd like to talk to you about that on a separate conversation.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'd love to.
Anything to shut them up?
Actually, no joke, because not many people I know that have done it this long. And I don't know if you found a constant. It's like, I just don't know what I'm doing. But anyway. As I say, I will actually text you about that. But yeah, sorry. The point is, all these guys were saying about their wives and their girlfriends being at home, breastfeeding the baby. Oh, I can't believe you're at this session. Da da da. And they all got to stay late and have a few beers and do their thing.
Yeah.
And I had to go home because I had to run back and get Joni. And I'm not saying that's. I'm saying that's fine. You know, I accept that, and there's a.
But it's the stuff you miss.
But it's the stuff you miss.
It's like when you go and have a fag. If you don't smoke, you miss that. Yeah,
exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very old school example. No, but it is. It's true. You know, if you're not doing the after things, if you're limited, and plus you feel like you're the outsider as well, don't you?
So all it is really is finding ways to rewire people's mindsets and say, well, having a child is the most natural thing in the world. Therefore, because it's the most natural thing in the world, let's not penalise those mothers, you know, who got the talent, who are the, I always say, like, you know, with the grafters and the early risers. And it's like, let's make sure that those women are, you know, they might not be able to stay late then, but let them come in 3 hours earlier and start the session at, you know, so it fits in with their day. And I think if we've got a community where we're all working together, then we don't even need to worry about those things, you know? If we can do if we know we can always kind of tune into amazing sessions. And I'm talking about, you know, I want them to be with talented people. It's not like any old Tom, Dick and Harry can get on. It's like, we're talking like we want serious, we're scouting for serious talent. You know, that we want them to be, it's not kind of like just a free for all, you know, and I don't want to be exclusive saying that. I don't want to exclude people, but I think that there'll be something for everyone, but then there will be some things that you know, we will be inviting. We want people to have a kind of a level of, there needs to be, you know, some sort of criteria. Yeah, yeah. And I think that will enable us to create material that we can then pitch and we can go to. There's an amazing Sinks agency actually called Sister who I've been speaking to, and we're really keen to work with them. You know, 80% of their roster is female, you know, and I mean,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I mean, this is what I'm talking about. So it's like, actually they're just using those, they don't, you know, they're going if somebody kind of comes looking for a group of musicians or composers, it's like, well, here you go, here's the roster.
Yeah.
They're all women, or they're all mums, so they work between these times.
Yeah.
But they'll be twice as efficient, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just reworking, and I don't think it's that hard.
No, it's not.
You know,
it's not that hard.
So it's just changing habits, isn't it? Really,
yeah.
Having a dialogue and also having a bit of a safe space to kind of come together and support each other. And like I say, we don't want it to be a moaning mum's club, but sometimes you do just want to have a moan, don't you?
Yeah.
Slag someone off.
Yeah.
You need to do that sometimes.
But it's good. It's good to kind of talk about it and get it in the open, because people don't think about that stuff until you're in the position where you're stopped from doing certain things because of your family situation.
Yeah.
If you've never had to consider that, it's like when you try and get on a tube with the pram.
Oh, God.
Like, you suddenly, you know, until you actually have a pram, you're not aware of them.
No.
Like, the amount of times I wouldn't pay any consideration to, not because I'm inconsiderate, but just because you just don't think about it. But as soon as you actually have got a pram and you're trying to navigate escalators and tubes
and you know,
the people that come and stand in front of you, and it's like, do you not see me? But they don't see you because they've never had to be in that position, you know. Mm. It's so weird.
We're all in our own little bubble. I mean, our own little world, aren't we, really? And I think people have got good intentions, but everyone's caught up in their own stuff. And I think most of the time it's people are just, they're caught up in their own feelings in their head. And actually, if you kind of ask someone, they'll probably be a bit mortified. But I can remember that. Being pregnant and just sometimes just stood there and feeling really tired and most of the time people do get up, don't they? But there's always sometimes when they don't, you're just like, really? You're just going
to
sit there?
I didn't commute that, because I used to live in Bethnal Green, so I could walk to work, and I worked from home mainly anyway, so I only did like a day or two in the office. But young kids, like adolescent boys, always used to get up for me. The city worker men types, never.
I agree.
Ever got up?
I think that's interesting.
And women, but not always. Yeah, but then I used to go like maybe from Bethnal Green to Liverpool Street. You know, it was like one stop. It wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, but one of my friends, someone actually made her cry once. She was very heavily pregnant, and she asked a man to get up, and he said no, and she just cried.
And did he then get up?
And had to get off the tube. No, he didn't get up. No, he was like, no,
I'm
sitting down.
What an arse.
You know, but she wasn't having a particular good day. And I mean, for you to ask someone and them to say no, that's a bit of a killer,
I think.
Because then it's like, what do you think, that I should not be there? Like, that's... When I was getting on the tube to the pram, I mean, I'd never go in rush hour. I'd always avoid it because I'd never want to get on a tube in rush hour anyway, let alone with a pram.
Oh,
but
God,
people do look at you like, what the fuck are you doing on a train with a pram? It's like, I'm a person.
I know.
This is life. Well, I think, you know, it's not just for...
But that's sort of the thing. I think people are always kind of like, well, you made the choice. You've chosen to have a child.
Yeah.
And it's a bit
like the same.
It's the same concept with work and music. It's like, well, you chose, you made that choice. And I think, you know, that's the problem. Because it's like, well, actually, A, it's not always a choice. B... it's the most natural thing in the world, so, you know.
Well, if we didn't have babies, we wouldn't have the next lot of doctors.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Teachers.
Exactly.
And
musicians, you know, the next lot of musicians, yeah, the next amazing singers, and
this is life. Yeah. We have to have babies. Yeah,
exactly.
But I do think it's most people, when you have the conversation, they'll agree with you. But I just think we're so ingrained to just think about, well, to think selfishly, I think.
Mm.
You go to work, you do what you got to do, you don't want anyone to get in your way, you know.
100%.
Unfortunately.
No, 100%.
So it is about changing the way we think about
people
and the world. And but the more people that are doing it and the more conversations we're having, it's only going to spread, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
So I breastfed my eldest daughter. I stopped breastfeeding her when I think she was about 2 years and 2 or 4 months because I was then pregnant with my second and I was very sick and I couldn't keep anything down. So I was like, I can't then be feeding her if I'm not getting... And plus, I didn't want to be breastfeeding them both at the same time. So I knew that I had to stop anyway. Yeah. And it was only at night, like she ate during the day. Same. But it was just at night to get her off to sleep. But for me, it just got to sleep.
But when did you... She's the same. She'll just instantly go back to sleep if I feed her in the night. So she goes down at 6:30. I feed her to sleep. She goes to sleep within seconds. Because she doesn't nap in the day anymore. So she's just knackered by 6 o'clock. And then she'll wake up any time between like 10, which is a bit annoying because sometimes I'll still be doing work, 10 or midnight. And usually at that point, I just get her, plonk her on the big bed. I'll get on the, you know, there's a big double bed in her room.
Yeah.
Plonk her on that bed. So she'll go to sleep in her own bed, which is fair enough. Plonk her on the big bed with her duvet over her and then feed her back to sleep. And by that point, I'll just fall asleep as well. So then we'll just co-sleep the rest of the night because then she'll probably wake up maybe for one more feed or maybe not. She might then get through till six. So actually on a good night, I think, what's the problem? But on a bad night, like last night, she woke up at 10 and then I fed her and it took ages for her to kind of, she was just kind of there like, fuckling.
Yeah.
And then it's those nights where it felt like I was just never really in a deep sleep because every time I turn around, she'd just be like, you know, and they're just constantly like, it's like you're just this, you feel used. You just feel like you've got udders and they're just like, bang, 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 bang. And I'm just like, when's this going to end? And how do I end it? And I've read all the books, like, just make sure, just be firm and say, no, you don't need
it. It's got to be cold turkey.
It has really,
isn't
it?
With Lola, my sister stayed over.
Mm.
And so she slept with her.
Oh, that's a good idea. My sister could be the one. She loves my sister.
Yeah.
As in with Jane.
And she did cry, but... I think it was two nights and then it was fine. My sister did actually bring her into me when she was really crying one night. And she was like, look, and I was like, no, we can't. We're doing this.
Yeah,
like,
definitely, yeah.
You know, but I was sick.
Of course.
If I hadn't have been sick, I don't know. But with Juno, I can't actually remember what happened with Juno. I know that I did just stop feeding her, but I can't remember. It wasn't obviously traumatic because then I would remember. Mm. She must just have got used to it. But I tell you what, when you stop feeding her, she will stop waking up in the night for it. It's magic.
I know. And I just don't know what to do. And
get your sister over.
I think you might be right because the thing is with James, I feel so sorry for him. They've got such a great relationship and she adores him. But when she wakes up at night, like last night, she went nuts when he tries to comfort her. She pushes him out the way. She walks out the room like a drunk person. Her hair's all up like Rod Stewart. She's just like, mommy! And she's just distraught, you know. And he's like, I can't even pick her up. She just roll out of his arms. Yeah. She's so angry. Whereas actually, I'm wondering about my sister because it's just, you know, we're quite similar. And I just think maybe she will. That could be, because, I mean...
And she's far enough removed as well. Mm. I think she's obviously can be like that with her dad because it's her dad.
Yeah.
But I do, because my friend had, I was talking to him actually, he had a sleep trainer come in with their son.
Oh, God, I hate sleep trainers. It scares
me. And I think it does just help if it's a stranger.
You're right, yeah. I think, well,
do you know what I mean? Because they know they can push you.
Yeah. It's a bit like when she goes...
But not that she's a stranger.
No, totally. I think you're right. I mean, the thing is, I keep waking up and I'm like, I want it to end. But then occasionally, I don't want it to end. Because, like, sometimes when I lie next to her and she has a little feed and then she's just like... And I'm like, this is going to be over. It's going to be over. And then I'll be really... I'll mourn it. And I'm like, well, I'm just caught in that thing where 50% of the time I really...
How old is she?
She's 2 and 2 months.
Oh, gosh. What am I on?
Okay.
No, that's fine. I've got 10%. 2 and 2 months. So, you know, I...
Yeah, I think...
It's time.
Maybe give yourself, say, when she's 2 and a half.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know... Because it is lovely, and it's not... I mean, it's a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, and she and it's, you know, giving us both... She's protect... You know, she's getting all the nutrients.
Yeah,
and,
it's a not... Yeah, but, it's not a bad thing.
No,
it's just
it's
when
not.
It starts affecting... Like with me, like I had to stop feeding Lola because I was too sick.
Yeah.
And then I think with Juno, it got to the point, I think, where maybe she lost interest a bit. And then when they're just using you, they just like have a little suck
well,
on
Well, she's
them.
Using me a bit,
You're
really.
Like, no.
She's just using me, really.
Got to stop now.
Although she does, but sometimes I hear and she's gulping. And I think, I do give her water and, you know, and also I don't think she never eats a huge amount at dinner because she knows... She's like, yeah, I know, yeah. I've got my midnight feast coming up. So, you know, oh, I don't know.
Oh,
I'm caught between.
But you can do it. You might have just have a couple of
rough nights.
Hard nights.
Yeah.
But
it's I think what's really hard is I have tried to say no before. And that's awful. Like having a cuddle with them, but not giving them, it's like, it just doesn't work because they're just distraught. Yeah. And they're like, what are you know, even though she understands, it's just. I think it's got.
I remember I was running Juno a bath once, and I was kind of leaning over the bath, and I just saw her face coming through my mouth. Like, after I'd stopped feeding her, like a little while after, so it was just so funny.
Oh, it is
a little.
Oh, she's obsessed. If we have a bath together, she's just like, and I'm like, seriously, it's we're just on the edge. I know in my heart it's coming.
Do
to
you
an
tell
end.
Her that? She needs maybe start to say, you know, this needs mummy's gonna run out.
Yeah,
soon,
I think that's well, we did right, we were just on course, and actually, she was responding really well. But then we all got COVID at just before Christmas, and I was actually quite poorly. And I, for like 3 nights, I said to James, I can't continue denying her at the moment. She's not well, I'm not well.
So I was like, it's just
going to be easier for me to lie next to her, even though I was feeling dreadful, just to her feed. And we both slept, you know, pretty badly, but at least, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that, and then, so
yeah,
from,
you can't do that
no.
when you're sick.
And then from then, it's just like, it's fallen back as it was. And then, you know, you just, so kind of need to just do it, but... Oh dear. Anyway. Sorry to end on that.
It's a bit, no, but
it's
all part of
and
it.
And it's really
isn't
refreshing
it?
To actually talk to someone who's you know.
So Mama's in Music.
Yeah.
Yep, I will share all the links for everything.
Yes.
So people can find
brilliant.
You.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's just Mama's MAM1M. Mama's.
Okay.
In Music.
Mama's.
Yeah. And as I say, it's Facebook, Instagram, and we've got a private group.
Wicked.
So you can find that. And then I think you have to answer a couple of questions. Yeah. And, you know, we'll let you in.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk about it.
More than a pleasure. More than a pleasure.
And I can't wait to see how wonderful it gets.
Yeah, I hope so. I think I'll keep you posted. Yeah. I'll keep you posted.
Yes.
Thank you so much
All
for
right,
having
well,
me.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Wasn't that lovely? We still haven't met for a coffee. We recorded that a little while ago, and we keep trying to get something in, but it's just hard with parent responsibilities, ironically. So yeah, but if you want to get in touch with Mary, hit her up. Join her organisation if it affects you as well. Obviously, it's all about the supporting women, women supporting women, mums supporting mums. Please subscribe to. Podcast. I've got loads of guests. Check out the back catalogue if this is the first time you're listening. Have a little look at all the other episodes because we've had some really great guests on. But yes, I hope you have a lovely week ahead. I hope you're good. I hope you're healthy. Stay safe, stay sane. Big love to you all, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.